So just stay where you are. That spirit name given to me is Soaring Eagle. I belong to the Loon Clan. That first song I sang, I first heard that at a Sundance in Sagging First Nation, about an hour north of the city, many years ago. And when I first heard that song, I don't know why, but it touched my heart. So anyways, when they were giving us a little break, called over the man that had been singing the song at the big drum. And I offered him some tobacco, and I asked if I can learn that song. Can I use it? So he gave me that permission to use that song. But he told that song, it originally comes from up west in Alberta. That's where that song originally came from. He was singing it at another gathering in Sioux Valley many years back. And when he was done there in Sioux Valley, those people there in Sioux Valley, they said, "Oh, that's a pretty song. What's the name of that song you just sang?" And he realized that it didn't have a name. So those people there in Sioux Valley, they gave it a name. So that first song I sang for you this morning, today we call that song the Pepsi Cola song. Okay? But simply, it's a welcome song. It's a welcome song, right? That second song I sang in that, some of you may have heard it before, we call that song the Bear Song. Eh? And the words are very simple. But what we're saying through that song is that we can see those grandmother, grandfather spirits. They're walking towards us from all four directions. And when I say grandmother, grandfather, spirits, I'm talking about all of our ancestors that have already gone ahead of us. So as we see them walking towards us, we say to them, Manituma kwa pijenye mishinam, we say. We say to them, come and bless us. Come and bless us. But it's through that song that we take a little bit of time this morning as we begin our circle to acknowledge that each and every one of us sitting here from time to time, we all need healing. Healing in the way we think about others sometimes, anger, envy, jealousy. The way we think about ourselves sometimes, oh, I'm no good, I can't do anything right, I'm not smart enough. Or just the way we think about life in general. Why am I even here? What's my purpose, right? So it's to acknowledge that our thinking, we need healing in that way from time to time. Sometimes our bodies also needs that healing, right? We all carry illnesses in our bodies, right? You're worried this morning, right, for the last 4 days, yeah? Because somebody you care about was carrying something in their body, yeah? An illness. And we all, again, carry that from time to time. Diabetes is the number one disease amongst us as indigenous people today. Sometimes our spirit, it too needs healing, because sometimes we lose hope, we lose faith. Sometimes we can't see that road that we need to be walking. And sometimes some of us, we even just want to give up on life, right? So it's through that song that we acknowledge that each and every one of us, we need healing from time to time. But just as much as we all need healing, every one of us sitting in here today as well, we all carry that gift. And that's that gift to heal others as well. Sometimes it's how we choose to use our words. When we say kind things, good things to somebody, when we acknowledge somebody, when they do something good, we make that person feel good. Sometimes all it takes is a hug. Sometimes maybe just an ear. When we take that little bit of time to listen, even if we don't have the answer, we can help that person a little bit. Yeah? So that's why I sang that second song. It's to acknowledge that we all need healing, but we also carry that gift to heal as well. That third and final song, that one we call Creator Song. And again, the words are very simple. Thank you, Creator. Yeah? But it's through that song that we take a little bit of time to say thank you to all those grandmother, grandfathers that have walked ahead of us, right? Because they're the ones that made the trails that we walk today. It's through that song that we take a little bit of time to say thank you to her. We call her Gimama Nana Ke. We call her Mother Earth because she gives us everything that we can need and want to have this life. And it's through that song that we take a little bit of time before we begin this morning also to say thank you to Creator, to God, because it's Creator that watches over all of life, right? And last but not least, it's through that song that we also take that little bit of time to say thank you to each and every one of you that have taken that time to be here today as well. So having said that mouthful of thoughts, welcome, eh? welcome. I began by introducing myself through my spirit name. And we're told that we all have spirit names. Eh? We all have spirit guides, all of us. Eh? So when I speak my name, it's not for your benefit. Eh? But sometimes my helpers, they might be halfway around the world maybe, eh? Or halfway across the universe, right? But as the instant I speak that name, Bimashiginyu, right away they're beside me, helping to guide those words. Eh? Because I am only a human being, right? Sometimes I might say the wrong things, right? Or sometimes I might do the wrong things. And it's not never my intent, right? To misguide or to hurt anybody, but sometimes I need help. Eh? So that's why I speak that name that was given to me, to make sure to at least try my best so that my words come out in the best way. So anyways, why am I standing up here today? A couple weeks ago, Tim approached me and asked, do you have anything around the winter solstice, around winter, because we're coming to that time of the season? So it made me think a little bit in terms of if I had any thoughts on that. And one of the first thoughts that came right away is that for us as Indigenous people, winter was a time of storytelling. Eh? Because again, like we couldn't be out there, you know, doing all the regular things that we would normally would have done. So we would have prepared in the fall. Yeah? And the winter time was a time for storytelling. Yeah? So I was sharing with Tim and that, well, maybe that's what I could do then, is maybe share some stories. Yeah? So that's what you can expect the rest of this morning, is I'm going to share some stories with you. But let me begin with this time of year, actually. This used to be my favorite time of year in that, eh? In the winter time, because in the winter time, my great grandmother raised me. My great grandmother in that, who raised me in that, eh? In the winter time at night, I'd crawl into bed with her, right? Every night, and my cuckoo in that, I call her cuckoo. She had this down-fill blanket, eh? Goose feathers. Eh? Must have weighed about 40 pounds, this blanket, right? Because she'd have to throw it on top of us, right? And that blanket would land and I wouldn't be able to move, right? But, did I ever feel safe laying beside my cuckoo, right? Now, the thing about my cuckoo in that is she was a devoted Catholic in that, eh? And every night she would pick up her rosary and she would say her prayers, eh? And the thing about that rosary and that, those beads, that's a prayer, eh? For each bead takes forever, right? To go all the way around. And finally, after many, you know, whatever and that, after she'd get towards that little cross and I'd know she was almost done, eh? I'd start getting antsy in bed. And sure enough, she'd put the rosary aside. She'd turn around and she would tell me stories. Nene Bush, Wissagajak, Windigo, right? All these myths and legends, right? And as she would tell those stories, I would close my eyes. And for me, it was just like turning on a TV, because through her words, eh, I knew exactly what Nene Bush looked like. I knew where Windigo Khan lived, eh, through her words. Sometimes she'd tell me stories about her childhood. Now my cuckoo, her childhood was very different from mine. She was born in 1897, my cuckoo, eh? So her childhood was very different. We grew up in a community called Mallard. If you look on the map, that's right in the middle of Manitoba, right? But anyways, I remember her sharing a story one time when she was a little girl playing along the lake in Mallard, and how as she was playing along the lake, she came through some bulrushes, and she opened those bulrushes. And just as she did that, she said a canoe went gliding by. Eh? And there was about four or five men, she said, they didn't have no shirts on, eh? Paddling. Eh? They didn't see her, right? But what she said about those four or five men, she said, without no shirts on, as they paddled past her, she said, she noticed, she said, that none of them, she said, none of them had any hair, eh? Just on top. Eh? Mohawks, Algonquins, eh, from way up east and that, and little old Mallard, right? So those types of stories I grew up with. My cuckoo and that, she didn't have electricity. Eh? So at night and that, we would sit at her kitchen table with her little cool oil lamp, right? And I'd been mesmerized by the flickering of the lights against the wall, right? But my cuckoo, she was always busy. Eh? She always had her hands. She was always doing something, right? And one of her things in the evenings when we'd sit at the table is that she'd always be knitting. Yeah? She was always knitting something, right? But she also liked to smoke, right? So anyways, because her hands would be busy, by the time I was about 7 or 8 years old, I knew how to take her rolling paper, her tobacco. Huh? I got pretty good, right? And my favorite part was after I'd rolled that tobacco for her, my cuckoo, she'd say, okay, Sako, light it. Eh? So I'd take a match. Eh? But that's the kind of relationship me and my cuckoo had. Eh? So a lot of my memories of childhood was that, eh? Growing up and having this little old lady in that, eh? Very caring, very loving, and when she would speak to me, when she would talk to me and that, eh? She didn't talk to me downward like that, right? But she talked to me like this, eh? Like a human being. Eh? And that's what sticks out for me in terms of growing up in that era, in that childhood and that. Eh? So, stories. Kichimejekamek, a long time ago, the people, they came together. They came together for that ceremony of ceremonies. Eh? We call it the dance of life. Eh? Some people know it today as a Sundance ceremony. But in that ceremony, us men, we had a responsibility. And in that ceremony, the women, they too had a responsibility. The men's responsibility was to go into the forest and go and cut down that mitigunabe, we call it, that tree of life that they would erect at the center of that ceremony. Our responsibility also was to go and cut the trees that we would use to build that lodge where we would have that ceremony. The women's responsibility was to go into the forest and peel the bark off the trees that they would use to tie that lodge together. The women's responsibility also was to prepare the feast food that they would all share as part of that ceremony. So as the men were going off to go and get that mitigunabe, the little boys came following the men. The men turned to those boys and asked, "What are you doing, little boys? We're coming to help you," they said. "No, no, you little boys, you're going to be in the way. Go play." And they shooed them away. As the women, too, were making their preparations, the little girls came following the women. Those women turned to those girls and asked, "What are you doing, little girls? We're coming to help you," they said. "No, no, you little girls, we have lots to do, very little time. You're going to be in the way. Go play." And they shooed them away. Sure enough, those men, they brought out that mitigonabe, they dressed it up, and they erected it. They built that lodge, tying it together with the bark that the women had brought. A huge feast was prepared outside that lodge. All those women, all those men gathered around. They're about ready to have that last meal before that ceremony began, when the little girls, the little boys came squeezing in between the adults. But again, somebody turned to those children and said, "You children, this food, this water, that's for the dancers. Don't you realize that they're going to give up this food, this water, so the rest of us can have life? You kids can wait for a little while longer." And again, they shooed them away. Sure enough, after everybody had their fill, all those women come filing into that lodge, all the men on the other side, that big drum, they were just about ready to start when the little girls came filing in, the little boys as well. But again, somebody turned to those children and said, "You children, this is a very sacred ceremony. This is no place for you to be running around, fooling around. You go and do that at the camp." And again, they shooed them out. Sure enough, that big drum, it started. Those women on that side, the men on this side with their eagle whistles. 4 days, 4 nights, they danced and they prayed. Finally, on the 4th day, as that ceremony was coming to an end, a huge feast was prepared outside that lodge once again. All those women came out, all the men on the other side. They were just about ready to start that celebration when they noticed that the kids weren't there. "Ah, we can't have this celebration without them. They must be at the camp." Sure enough, somebody ran, and they came and reported that there was no kids at the camp. So, of course, this alarmed the adults. "Well, we can't have this celebration without them. We have to find them." So sure enough, in those 4 directions, they started to look, some in the field, some in the forest. This man, he came to this hill, and as he started to climb, he could hear. Got louder and louder and louder. Finally, he got to the top of that hill. Just on the other side of that hill, this small little mitigonabe, this small little lodge, little drum with some little boys sitting, girls on that side, boys on this side with their little eagle whistles. And that's the way that story is told. And we all take different meaning from that story, and the most common meaning in that is that we have to involve our children, right? That we need to involve them in that. Eh? But the other way I take that story as well is that aren't we all creators' children, right? And if so, then all of this belongs to all of us, right? And I don't believe anybody has a right to say to somebody else, "Oh, you can't be a part of this because your skin is different than mine," right? I don't think anybody has a right to say to somebody else, "Oh, you can't be a part of this because you believe different from what I believe." I don't think anybody has a right to say to somebody else, "Oh, you can't be a part of this because you sit somewhere else on that totem pole," right? And that's why, as indigenous people, we share what's under Mother Earth, we share what's on top Mother Earth, we share what's above Mother Earth, right? Because we know that she doesn't just belong to us. And the same is true of our teachings, our ceremonies, our songs, our knowledge of those medicines. We share those as well, too, in that. Because again, we know that they don't just belong to us. Now, the only problem with sharing sometimes is that sometimes somebody will come along, but they'll go and twist that up, right? And that's why sometimes, unfortunately, I'll walk into a store in Winnipeg, sweetgrass, $7.95, right? Sage, half price today, $4.50, right? And that's unfortunate in that, eh, when we see that from time to time, eh? Because what did it cost them? Possibly a little tobacco, right? But now they're filling their pockets, right? And that's unfortunate when we see that. I don't know if you remember this, but probably now about 8 years ago, maybe more, this guy in Sedona, Arizona, right? He must have attended one of our ceremonies out there somewhere, got it into his head and that. So what did he do? He built this big structure, right? Crammed 60-some people in there. Three of them ended up dying, right? And he was charging them $10,000 a head, right? For that personal growth development journey, yeah, he called it, right? And that's unfortunate when we see those things, yeah? But still we share. Because yeah? Again, we know that they don't just belong to us, right? So I wanted to just share that with you. So I'm going to share a few stories as well, or a few teachings on that. Eh? Yeah, so Teresa's going to help me with this first story, if that's okay. Yeah, yeah. So when we start a story, we always start off with a long time ago, right? We never start our stories with once upon a time, because our stories are very real to us in that, right? So Kichimejekamek, a long time ago, when Creator first put the human beings here on Mother Earth, Creator made for the human beings a trail. And Creator told the human beings, follow this trail and life will always be good. So all the human beings, they left together on this trail Creator had given them. But for some reason, the white nation, they left that trail Creator had given them to follow a new trail. The rest of the human beings, they kept on that trail Creator had given them. But then for some reason, the black nation, they too left that trail Creator had given them to follow a new trail. The rest of the human beings, they kept on that trail Creator had given them. But then for some reason, the yellow nation, they too left that trail Creator had given them to follow a new trail. The rest of the human beings, they kept on that trail. But then for some reason, the Anishinaabe, they too left that trail Creator had given them to follow a new trail. Not too long after they left that trail, the Anishinaabe, they became sick. Sick in how they thought about others, themselves, about life. Their bodies became sick. Their spirit became sick. It so happened at that time there was a little boy who lived with the Anishinaabe, and he saw that his people were sick, and it hurt his heart to see that. So he took it upon himself that he would try and help his people. So one morning he began walking east, and he walked and he walked and he walked until one day he came across Turtle. That turtle asked that little boy, what are you doing so far away from home, little boy? And he told that his people were sick, that he wanted to help them. I'm sorry, little boy, but I don't have that gift yet to help your people. But go back, I'm sure the answer is there. So that little boy, he returned, found his people where he had left them, but nothing had changed. They were still sick. So then he walked south. And again he walked and walked and walked until one day he came across that Shkadebejiki, we call him, that buffalo. That buffalo asked that little boy what he was doing, wandering way out there all by himself. And again he told that his people were sick, he wanted to help them. I'm sorry, little boy, but I don't have that gift yet to help your people. But go back, I'm sure the answer is there. And again he returned and nothing had changed. So then he walked west. And he walked and walked till one day he came across that big water, and there he met that big fish. That fish asked what he was doing, wandering out there all by himself, and again he told that his people were sick, he wanted to help them. I'm sorry, little boy, but I don't have that gift yet to help your people. But go back, I'm sure the answer is there. And again he returned, and still nothing had changed. So then he walked north. And again he walked and walked for many days until one day he came across that Wapshkizimakwa, that white bear. That bear asked what he was doing, wandering out there. Again he told his people were sick. I'm sorry, little boy, I don't have that gift yet to help your people. But go back, I'm sure the answer is there. And again he returned, found his people, but nothing had changed. So one night as he was sleeping, his spirit began to travel through his dream. And in his dream, he saw himself sitting on this hill, and there the answer would come to him. So the next morning when he awoke, he went to go and search out that hill, found it just the way he had dreamt it. And to the top of that hill he climbed, and that's where he went and sat for the next 4 days, 4 nights, without food, without water. Finally, on the fourth day, as he was sitting on this hill, Ginyu, eagle, came and landed beside him. that eagle asked what he was doing sitting on this hill all by himself. And again, he told that his people were sick, that he wanted to help them. I'm sorry, little boy, but I don't have that gift yet to help your people. But I think I know where I can take you. Get on my back. Sure enough, that little boy got on that eagle's back. That eagle, it spread its wings and they started to fly. They flew and they flew till they reached Grandmother Moon. And on the other side, that eagle landed. And when that little boy got off that eagle's back, in front of him sat seven elders. Those elders asked what he was doing so far away from home. And again, he told that his people were sick, that he wanted to help them. Those elders told that little boy, your people, they need to go back to that trail Creator had given them. Because that trail, they said, it leads into their mother's womb. And that's that creation story of a sweat lodge ceremony. They tell us that's the safest place for us to go and help ourselves, to heal ourselves. Yeah? So that's part of how we use that ceremony. Yeah? And it represents our mother's womb in that sense, right? But before that little boy left those elders, he asked, well, how is it we should ever find you again should we need you? Because you sit on this side of the moon from where we are, we can't see you. Ah, get, yes, you're right, they said to him. So that's why they tell us at night, we look towards the northwest, we see that constellation we call the Big Dipper, right? We count those stars, there's seven of those stars. They say that's those elders sitting up there. Should we ever need them again? Right? Should we ever need them again? But next time you're out in the country and you see that constellation, the Big Dipper and that, you count those stars, that middle star on the handle, if you look really, really hard at it, you can see it with the naked eye, but if you look really hard, just above it towards the left is a tiny, tiny little star. And they say that's that little boy, because he earned that right to sit with those elders up there as well, right? So when I first heard that story, my cuckoo used to tell me that story. Eh? I remember it from when I was about 4 or 5 maybe, right? That was one of my bedtime stories. But anyways, about 1969, a few years later in that, my cuckoo and I, we were watching TV one night. And what we were watching is we were watching our neighbors to the south landing a spaceship on the moon that night, right? But anyways, the very, very first words they said as soon as they touched down, the eagle has landed, right? Very first thing they said, the eagle has landed. Why I remember that is because as soon as they said that, my cuckoo, she turned to me and she said, Shkana, you see, she said, Kikiwin tamon, I told you, she said. Eh? Because it was foretold that a long time ago, that one day an eagle would land on the moon. And it was foretold a long time ago that when that happened, that our people would once again stand up and we would say enough. Enough to the government, enough to the police, even enough to the churches and that sometimes, right? Because we do have our own ways to help ourselves, to heal ourselves. Eh? And one of those ways is that sweat ceremony, sun dance. We have all kinds of ceremonies. Eh? And that helps us, you know, to heal ourselves and to help ourselves. Eh? But part of why I wanted to share that story as well, too, in that in life sometimes, right, things will come in front of us. Eh? It's like that little boy, he saw a problem in his community. What did he do? He traveled over there, over there, over there, over there, right? Looking for an answer. But meanwhile, the answer was within him all that time. All he had to do is dream it. Eh? And the same is true with us as well, too, in that, right? Anytime those problems come in that, right? Sometimes we just got to believe. Eh? We have to believe that the answer will come, the right answer will come. Eh? And most times, you know, if we really look within ourselves, eh, that answer will come in terms of how to solve whatever it is that's in front of us, whatever it is that's hurting us, that's bothering us. Hmm? So that's part of why I wanted to share that little story with you as well. Hmm? So anyways, that's one creation story I wanted to share with you. Maybe, sure, let's go to that one. So just this one picture here and that. But anyways, I just thought maybe I'd also share this turtle teaching with you as well, too, in that. Eh? So on a turtle in that, there's 7 points in that. Eh? And the 7 points is that tail, the body, the head, and the four legs, right? So I thought maybe that'd be a good opportunity maybe for me to share another creation story, or another teaching at least. So that tail, that body, and that head, they represent those three fires, eh? Those three fires. That first fire is that fire of long ago, eh? And how it is that that fire for us as indigenous people, it almost went out some at one time. It almost burnt out for us, eh? And the reason they say is because of colonization, right? Because when the Europeans first came here to Turtle Island across that big water, they brought with them their own ideals, their own beliefs. And they saw the Anishinaabe people here, and they thought that their ways were better than ours. So at one time here on Turtle Island, it was forbidden. Eh? It was even against the law for some of us to practice our own ways, eh? Our traditions, our ceremonies. So what those old people would do is, under the cover of darkness, eh, when the sun would go down, they would leave their villages away from prying eyes, prying ears, and that's where they would go and hold their ceremonies. Hmm? And that's how they barely managed to keep that fire alive. Hmm? That middle part of that turtle, it represents that fire of today. How it is today, that fire, it's getting stronger once again. And the reason it's getting stronger is because more and more of our people are coming back to those ceremonies. More and more of our young people are also coming, wanting to learn who they are, where it is that they come from. But it's not even just our own people. Remember I talked about those other three tribes that left that trail? They too are also coming to ceremony. We see that very often today at our sun dances, at our sweat ceremonies, eh? Where we have a whole body of people, hmm? Coming together to pray together. Eh? I run a sweat lodge, eh? Where I live out in Hillside Beach in that. Eh? So a couple years back in that, I had this group of educators from Minnedosa, hmm? Come out in that. Eh? And usually in the sweat ceremony and that, I usually let that drum travel inside the lodge, eh? Meaning everybody has an opportunity to pray or share or sing. Eh? So anyways, it came to one of these ladies in that, and they were all non-indigenous, and the woman in that, the drum came to her, and it's all pitch black, dark inside, right? We can't see each other. And she asked in that, and she asked, is it okay if I share a song? I said, yeah, of course, share a song. And she said, but it's a Christian song. Well, more welcome even, right? So she started beating the drum in that, and she started singing Amazing Grace. Eh? And as she started singing that song in that, the rest of us inside the lodge, we started singing with her. Eh? And it just sounded like a choir, eh? Singing inside that lodge. It was very beautiful in that. And one of the most beautiful experiences I've had anyway, eh? You know, sharing. So that's what that center represents, is that, you know, that fire, it's getting stronger once again, eh? Because we're all wanting to learn, trying to learn in that, eh? In terms of how it is, again, at the beginning of us coming together, acknowledging, you know, Treaty 1 territory, for example, right? We're all trying to be inclusive in those kinds of ways. So that's what that center represents, that fire of today. That head part in that represents that fire of tomorrow, and how it is now it's our responsibility to pass those teachings on, right? To ensure that that fire will never go out. Those legs, they represent those four directions, those four seasons of life, childhood, adolescence, adulthood, elderhood, right? The old people, they tell us that there's something wrong today with that circle. And what they say is that those little ones, we're not teaching them those seven sacred teachings like we used to: love, respect, honesty, humility, courage, wisdom, and truth. We don't teach them early. Hmm? And to see that we're not doing that, right, is I've opened the paper 41 times this year. Hmm? And somebody took somebody's life again, right? Because our young people, they're not being taught to respect that life. Eh? We're not doing that enough today, right? Long time ago in that, eh? When a child was one, yeah, when they first learned how to walk, they would not let that child go and run around on the grass. They would have a ceremony for that. That one we call that walking out ceremony. And the reason for that ceremony, it was to teach that little one that we have to respect Mother Earth, right? Now take a moment, right? That child is only 1 year old, and already we were teaching them that first sacred teaching of respect. And again, unfortunately, we don't do that enough today. Eh? We don't teach our children. That second one, direction, eh? That next stage of life, adolescence, child, you know, teenage years. Us, we don't call it that. We call that one that stage of the fast life. Eh? We call it the fast life. Because we get to that stage, 12, 13, 14, we want to be in that next stage. Can't tell me what to do, right? Because we know it all already. Eh? But that's what they call that stage. Eh? But today they say those young ones and that, they don't take that time anymore to go and visit those elders, eh? To go and learn from those elders, their teachings, right? So they're living that fast life. That next stage, that adult stage, that's that stage of great responsibility, they call it, right? That's what they call that stage. But what do we see today? We see over 9,000 indigenous kids in that system, the child welfare system. Because some of our parents, they've forgotten their roles and their responsibilities, unfortunately. Yeah? In that last stage, that elder stage, right? We call that one that stage of great wisdom. Because when you think about it, you've traveled all the way around experiencing all those things that life has to offer us. So by the time you get to that age, you have this wealth of knowledge. Yeah? So now you're supposed to teach that. You're supposed to pass it on, right? But our elders, for whatever reasons, they're being stingy today. Eh? They're not sharing. They're not passing on those teachings the way they were meant. So they say that's what's wrong with that circle today. In order to for us to make that circle strong once again, we have to begin with those little ones, meaning we have to teach them those seven teachings. Eh? We have to ensure that they're learning those teachings early. In order for us to make that circle strong, those youth in that, we have to slow them down a little bit, eh? And ensure in that they go and visit those elders and learn those teachings. Those parents in that, we got to remind them, eh? That's a gift. That's a gift from Creator, right? What do we do when we receive a gift? We're supposed to look after that gift, eh? So we got to remind them to look after that gift that they've been given. And those old people, those elders and that, we have to open those doors. We have to invite them to come and share those teachings and those stories. So they say if we do that, that will make that circle strong once again. But that's what I wanted to share with you in regards to that picture up here. So one of the other things that I wanted to share as well too in that, eh? Is, and this comes from one Sunday when I was sitting here about the teaching of or the explanation with the elephant and the bird, right? And how life is interconnected in terms of the relationships we have with one another, those things that happen along our journey, how those things are also interconnected, right? And the mistake we make sometimes is we'll just look at one thing or one part of our journey, eh? And sometimes if we get focused or too stuck on that, sometimes that can almost break us in that. Eh? So part of what I thought I would share with you this morning as well, too, then, is I wanted to talk a little bit about loss and grief. Eh? And it's an area that I'm a little too familiar with in a lot of ways in that. Eh? But at the same time in that, I use it also for teaching as well, too. So I wanted to share this guy with you. So, but anyways, February 3rd, 1982, in the paw and that, this beautiful little guy was born to us and that, and I held him a minute after he was born, and as I was holding him, I promised him that I would teach him how to ride a bike, that I would teach him how to catch a ball, that I would teach him or that I would pick him up and comfort him when he fell and hurt his knees. Eh? I was going to do that for him. Eh? 10 months later, in December 1982, I was commercial fishing on Lake Winnipegosis and that. Eh? And I remember that morning in the middle of December and that waking up and that me and my little guy wrestling in bed, him going, blowing on my belly, right? I remember putting on my ski suit, my ski boots and that. And I remember going out on the lake and being out on the lake all that day. I remember coming home, it was pitch dark already around 6 o'clock that evening. I remember the lights were out where we were staying. And I remember walking in, turning on the light switch. And I remember there was a note at the table, picking it up, baby sick, gone to hospital. So I remember in that, I ran next door to go and use the phone because I didn't have a phone. So I remember that nurse at the other end saying, yeah, your son is very sick. He's so sick that he's being medevaced to Winnipeg. We suggest you get down there. So I remember I started hitchhiking on number 6 because I didn't have a car. I remember this Gardewine trucker picking me up. I remember he dropped me off 5 o'clock in the morning right outside Children's Hospital over here. I remember I walked up to ICU intensive care on the 3rd floor. I remember this doctor telling us in that, yeah, your son is very sick in that. He's so sick that his little heart had stopped twice on the plane ride from Nepal. So he's also told us that because his little heart stopped, our son didn't get oxygen into his brain. So he said, we believe that your son is brain dead. But the other thing he said, so that's what we know so far, he said. What we don't know, he said, is when anybody's in that vegetative state, he said, we don't know if they're in any pain. And that's probably one of the worst things you can tell a parent, right? Because no parent ever wants to hear that their child might be in pain. A few days later, that doctor, he took us aside and he said, okay, you got two choices. He said, you can leave him on those machines knowing that your son is probably never going to wake up. Well, we know that he's not going to wake up, he said. Here's what we don't know, he said. We don't know if he will last another week, another month, another year, 10 years, 20 years. He said, that part we don't know. We just know that he's never waking up again. Or, and you put some papers in front of us, or you can sign over here and we can take him off. But because we didn't want our son to be in pain, we went ahead and we signed those papers. About 8 hours later, I was holding my little boy just all nice and warm in my arms and that. And that movie about teaching him how to ride a bike, catch a ball, picking him up when he fell and hurt his knees to comfort him, died that day because my son was dead. And I looked at God and I thought, who, right? Who in the hell is this, right? What kind of loving God would do that to me? There's no such thing as God. No such thing as God. So I started carrying that around when I was 20. And the thing about losing my son in that again was when my son died, I didn't cry. Because men don't cry, right? That's what society teaches us. So I didn't cry at his wake. I didn't cry at his funeral. But I tried to numb that hurt, that pain, the best way that I knew. And that was bringing stuff into my body. So I carried that for a long time. Finally, 8 years after my son died, those tears finally came out. And they flowed out like a fountain, right? And that's when I began my healing journey. Right. Fast forward to almost 4 years ago now, this coming January, I was living up in Thompson. I had the most perfect weekend. Had the most perfect weekend up in Thompson and that. Monday came around. I had the most perfect Monday at work and that. Everything just went smooth and right. Right, I got into my car at 4:30 and that, started the ignition because it was cold out. But as soon as I turned that ignition on, just this overwhelming feeling of sadness, just out of nowhere, right, just came at me. And just as fast as it came, it left and that. So I didn't think anything of it. So I went home, had my old man nap, got up around 6 o'clock and that, pitch blackout, turned my nightlight on, grabbed my iPad and that, and went straight to Facebook. And the very, very first feed on Facebook were the words RIP Tiny Tank. See, what the heck? Tiny Tank was my daughter, Miranda. I had just talked to her on Thursday. She was all happy. She was living in Toronto. She had just got an apartment. She even texted me the address. So I was thinking, what the heck in that, eh? So anyways, I went onto her page, and there was two other messages, RIP Tiny Tank. So what the hell? So then I got on the phone, and I called my other daughter here in Winnipeg, Vanessa. And I asked, have you been on the phone? Have you been on Facebook? I said, no, Dad. She said, I just got home. So well, go on there. I said, look on Miranda's webpage, eh? So I could hear her, what the heck in that, eh? So anyways, as we're talking and that, I'm Googling the address in Toronto that my daughter had given me that Thursday evening when I last spoke to her. So that came up, and I looked, and there was a cop shop not too far from there. So I clicked on that. Phone number appeared. But I didn't have the guts. I just could not make that phone call. So my daughter said, well, let me call. She said, hang up. I'll call you right back. Not too long after, my daughter called me back. She said, they can't tell us anything, she said, confidentiality, whatever. But she said, they gave us a number, she said, to the coroner's office. And she said, we're supposed to call there. So by then, I knew I had to make that call. So I got on the phone, this lady answered and that, and I told her why I was calling, that I had gotten this information on Facebook, and you know, I wanted to know or find out if my daughter was okay. So she asked, can you describe her? Does she have any physical tattoos, physical scars, that kind of stuff? So yeah, she has a scar, and just above the bridge of her nose. She was in a car accident some years ago. She has tiny tank tattooed on her knuckles. She even has a little army tank tattooed behind her left ear. So the lady at the other end, she says, I'm sorry to inform you, she said, but that's who we have here. We have your daughter. And that's how I came to learn that I had lost my 21-year-old daughter to a drug overdose in Toronto. So after that evening, after I'd gotten off the phone with all my relatives to inform them, I went downstairs to the basement to have a smoke, because I don't smoke in my house, but middle of January, Thompson, minus 50, right? So that time I was smoking in the basement and that. So I went down to have a smoke. I was leaning against my dryer and that, and I'm standing there having a smoke. And on the floor, as I'm having a smoke in that, I noticed that there was a rope laying on the floor. And I'm smoking and looking at this rope, smoking and looking at this rope. And all of a sudden, I had that rope in my hand. And I don't remember walking across the room and picking it up, but all of a sudden, I had that rope in my hand. And I'm looking at this rope, and I'm looking at the floor joist and the ceiling, looking at this rope, the floor joist and that. Not sure what I was thinking in that. I didn't know what I was thinking or anything. But I knew I had this rope in my hand and looking at the floor joists and the ceiling. And it seemed like forever. It seemed like time had stood still in that. And all of a sudden in the distance, I could hear a bell. I could hear a bell in that, chiming, right? And it got louder and louder until I realized it was my doorbell upstairs. So somehow I managed to put that rope down. I managed to put it down. I went upstairs and I answered the door. And it was a group of my coworkers, four ladies in that. And by then they had heard and they were coming to support me in that. They stayed with me till around, I don't know, 3 or 4 that morning in that, just to comfort me. But anyways, fast forward to last April. Woke up from a dream, and I started beating. And this guy came, right? But his name is Gazaminigut Kjemandun. And translated, loosely translated, it means the one that's touched by Creator, right? And how it is in this thing we call life, right? That Creator touches us in many different ways. Every time my children were born, I carried my children, and I thought, wow, what a beautiful gift, right? What a beautiful gift in that, I remember my daughter and that Miranda, and that night she took her first steps, And I remember her, why I remember that, is because after she took those first steps in that, she bumped her head in the corner of the coffee table. She had this big goose head, on her forehead. I remember her first day of school, remembering in that how I did not want to leave her, right? because now she was going to be on her own, right? So I had all these beautiful memories in that. Eh? But then I've also experienced those other parts of life as well, too, in that. Eh? How hurt I felt when their mother and I separated, right? How hurt I felt when I lost my son. And how hurt again when I lost my daughter, right? But Creator touches us in many different ways. Hmm? When I lost my son, I was only 20 years old, right? I was a little, you know, I dealt with it in a very different way. Yeah? I brought stuff into my body to numb, yeah? To get me through, right? But then I did that little bit of healing. And when I lost my daughter, yeah, I had 21 years of memories, beautiful memories with her, right? I had 21 years of memories in that. Yeah? And I realized, you know what, I'm strong, yeah? I'm a strong human being in that, right? And so I managed to get through that, right? So in that way, I believe Creator does touch us in very mysterious ways sometimes. Yeah? But one of the things that happened for me when I lost my daughter is I started questioning why, right? I should have, I could have. Eh? Oh, I shouldn't have let her go to Toronto, right? I could have stopped her. I could have done more. Yeah, beating myself up over it, right? But then, that's what that night sky represents. Eh? That life is a mystery. Who am I to question, right? Who am I to question God? Hmm? Who am I, right? Those night stars in the sky, when I pray for people, I pray to God, to Creator. Eh? But when I pray for me, I always pray to my cuckoo. Eh? I always pray to my son, Shannon. And today, I also pray to my daughter, Miranda. Because yeah? I still believe that they're watching over, that they listen, that they hear, and that they answer. Yeah? So that's what the night stars represent. Hmm? The colors on the side in that, red, white, yellow, and blue, those are my medicine colors. Anytime I go and do prayer clots with tobacco out in the country, whatever, those are the colors I use. Eh? And I'll tie those to a tree, right? So my spirit helpers, they'll come and they'll see that on that tree and they'll say, ah, Bimashiginyu came and left those, right? I wonder what he wants. Eh? And that's kind of like me with my business card in that sense, right? The braid in that, these sweetgrass braids in that, one of the teachings that comes with sweetgrass, it's a kindness medicine. That's that medicine we use to invite kindness in our thinking about others, ourselves, about life, to invite kindness back into our body, back into our spirit, right? So why I have these here, it's to remind myself, yeah, that I have to be kind to myself from time to time, yeah, and that I have to be kind to others, right? Because when you bring those together, when you bring all those strands of braids together, you make that one braid, that's where the strength comes. Yeah? And it's through our kindness that we're most strong, right? Anybody can raise their fist at somebody else. Anybody can use their words to hurt somebody, to put them down, right? But when we have somebody in our face trying to hurt us, trying to put us down, and to still respect that person, to still be kind to that person, sometimes can take a lot of strength. Eh? But that's to remind myself. That's where my strength comes in. Hmm? That little medicine pouch in that, again, it's to remind myself and to remind all of us that we all have those two gifts, right? Those gifts, that's our words, how we choose to use those words, our actions and how we choose to use those actions, right? We all have that gift. Eh? And sometimes we have to remind each other that we carry those gifts. Eh? But that's what that represents. Eh? So I thought I would share that with you in that. Eh? But part of why I honestly believe I'm here, that journey in that last 4 years, it's been like this, eh? Like roller coaster, right? In terms of missing my daughter, the way I was feeling for my daughter. So last February or so, I was in one of those low valleys, right? And Teresa and that, you know, she asked what was wrong. And I said, I'm missing my daughter. I'm missing her really bad right now. Yeah? So one of Teresa's suggestions was, well, you should maybe go put tobacco out, right? Because the two teachings that comes with tobacco, anytime we ask for something or anytime we give thanks. So she said, maybe you should go put some tobacco out, she said. Hey, but you know what? Maybe go someplace special. Yeah? So I thought about that for a while, and then the thought came, right? I remember my daughter Miranda, about 6 years ago or so, she came home from a weekend just all happy and everything. She said, Dad, I had the best time, she said. Eh? My friends and I, we went out to this place called Pinawa Dam, she said. Eh? And we slid along the rocks without no boats or no tubes or nothing, she said. And we had the most awesome time. So anyways, last February and that, I thought, you know what, that's where maybe I might go in that, right? So I drove out from my place out to Pinawa, got to the dams and that, eh? But the road is, you know, they don't plow it in the winter time, right? It's about, I don't know, 4 or 5 football fields in, right? It's quite a ways in. So I trudged in with my tobacco, and I took my drum with me and that, and I trudged into the, you know, where the waterfalls are and that, eh? And I got to where there's a little bridge, right? And the water flows underneath. It doesn't freeze during the winter. So anyways, I took my tobacco and I started to pray in that, and that heaviness that was inside of me, eh? I wanted that to be lifted in some way. Eh? So I prayed and prayed and prayed in that, eh? Because I didn't, you know, it hurts when I carry that, right? It's really heavy when I carry it. Eh? And after I was done, I let that tobacco fall into that moving water. Hmm? And then I started beating my drum. Eh? And I don't know where or how, eh? But the song came. Anima jag jamando penageshka kishemando we ahe we ahe we ahe ahe aho anima came from, eh? But the words are easy. Anima jagi jemandu. She's leaving Creator. Pinagishko kijemandu. Come and meet her, Creator. I started walking back to my car, and as I was walking back to my car, just all of a sudden I could just feel my daughter, Miranda, wrapping me. I could feel her presence. It was very, very real to me that she traveled back to the car with me. So those valleys, they haven't been as deep or low since then. I still get them a little bit, but not as deep. So part of why I wanted to share that with you and that, and I know this time of year, as we approach the holiday seasons and that, they say, right, that it can be the most depressing time, right, for a lot of people in that, unfortunately. And there's a lot of people also that go without this time of year as well. Yeah? So part I wanted to share that with you in that today, why I thought that was important, was, again, is just to remind us, to remind us in terms of how it is we choose to be in those relationships with one another. Yeah? How it is that we choose that. Yeah? Because we all have that within us, right? We all have that within us not to look. Yeah? We all have that within us not to say anything, right? Not even a hi sometimes, right? Because sometimes even just a hi, yeah, can help a person, right? At least they feel acknowledged. At least they feel that they're visible, yeah? This morning coming over here, coming across, the thing it's called Disraeli Bridge, I think, right? On Henderson there. But then as we came to the MMF area and that, and we see that village that's, you know, growing there pretty quickly, rapidly and that, and how sad and how, you know, sad that is in that. But at the same time in that, you know, how much strength there is in that as well, too, in that. And there's this beautiful teepee that somebody's made out of nothing. Yeah? And it's beautiful. Yeah? It's beautiful to see that. And that, you know, people draw strength from wherever it is that they can. Yeah? And again, this time of year, it's important that we draw that as much strength as we can from Creator, from God as well, too, in that. Eh? So I thought maybe that was appropriate for us to, for me at least, to share some of what I've shared. And I know we're running out of time, but I did want to share one more thing with you. But anyways, this guy here, he was gifted to me by an elder in Sagging many years ago. He has property out there. He has a big field where they have sun dances, and then he has a bunch of bush. But anyways, one day he was walking in the bush, and he almost tripped on something. So he investigated, and it, you know, looked, you know, very different from all the debris in the bush and that on the floor in the bush. So he kicked at it, and it moved, and he ended up digging this guy out of there, right? So he had it for a few years. He doesn't know who put it there, how long it was there, why they put it there. But he had it for a few years, and he decided, you know what, maybe you can use this. So he gifted it to me. So I've had it for several years now. And part of how I use it as a talking stick, and I use it in mediation, right? When two or more people are, you know, banging heads, whatever, and I'll use that as a talking stick. But anyways, what that represents for me is that Wolverine warrior, right? There's a big claw there. So if you know anything about a Wolverine is a little animal, right, that barely stands 2 feet tall, whatever, or a foot and a half tall, whatever, right? And a Wolverine will come face to face with a grizzly bear, 6 feet tall. Most times that Wolverine will win that fight. Eh? That's how fierce a warrior that Wolverine is. But anyways, this one here, he's also carrying a grandfather. Eh? That's what we call those stones, right? Rocks. When we bring them into the sweat lodge, we call them grandfathers. Eh? And why we call them grandfathers is because if you think about it, right, or you look, pick up a stone, you don't know how old that stone is. Might be 10 years old, might be 1,000 years old, right? But in that time, that stone's experienced and seen a lot of things, right? Birds landed, animals walked by, right? All kinds of things, right? So in that sense, they collect all that information, and it creates energy, yeah? Healing energy for us. So that's why we call them grandfathers. But anyways, he's carrying a grandfather. You put those together and that, you can make a war club, right? Hitting somebody in the head with that could hurt them pretty badly, right? It's pretty heavy, right? So anyways, but that Wolverine or that handle war club, whatever, it also has a line. That's how he found it. The line was across that, right down the middle. So I was thinking in that, well, sometimes our words can be that way as well, right? Where we can use our words to bash others and to hurt them. Eh? Or on the other side, or else we can use our words again to lift, to help people in that. Eh? So if you take any message from this morning in that, that would be my message in that. Eh? Be careful and choose wisely how it is we use our words with one another, eh? Especially the little ones, because the little ones are always listening, right? They're always listening in that. And it's important that we be careful how it is we teach them. Eh? And hopefully, right, that our role as parents, as uncles, aunties, grandparents, whatever, our role in that is to try and teach them a little better than maybe what we received, right? So that they have a better chance, you know, of growing in the next generations. Eh? So that's why I wanted to share that guy with you. So we started with song, we'll finish in song.
Hey, 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 hey
That song, a backward song, a contrary song, we call it a Windigo Khan song. Eh? But it's to remind us, and you may all be surprised to learn this, right? It's to remind all of us that we're not perfect, right? There's not one perfect human being, right? Only Creator is perfect, right? But there's not one perfect human being. So today, as we leave here, right, we still might say the wrong things from time to time. We still might do the wrong things from time to time, right? The worst thing, when you realize that you said something or you did something that hurt somebody else, the worst thing, beat yourself up, right? Waste the energy, I say. The best thing we can do is we can go to that person when we realize that our words or our actions hurt them. The best thing we can do is we can go to that person from our heart. We can say to that person, I'm sorry. That's the best we can hope for, right? Last thing I want to share with you, and that when I was a little boy, I try and sneak out the door, which some of you will do later on, right? I used to try and sneak out the door, right, to go and play in my community. But my Coco, she always had eyes behind her head, right? She'd always catch me. Guzis, my son. I turn around. Angamizin, she'd say. One word. But what my Coco was saying to me, she was saying to me, my son, be mindful. Be mindful of what you go and say out there and how you say it. My son, be mindful of what you go and do out there and how you do it, right? So I leave you with that word today as well, too, in that, eh? Angamizin, angamizin, eh? Angamizin, angamizin, eh? So with that, Kichimi Gwech, thank you for taking a little bit of time to listen. And yeah, so we're good. You gotcha.